Thanks, Michael. It's great to hear from you.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. We've been talking to a few cyclists around the place. Frankie Atkins was the last bloke that I had a chat with. You would have ridden against Frank in your day, wouldn't you?
Yes, Frank and Grant, they were my idols when I first started back in about 1972. They were the top riders around the state then.
Yeah, but amazing too, and their kids have come along, and CJ does a bit of your son does a bit of riding too. So you've passed on the old pedal power to the genes below.
Yeah, he had a bit of a go there for a while. Yeah.
Hey Rod, where are you these days? Tell us about what you're up to and what are you doing.
I'm at Hope Island on the Gold Coast at the moment. We moved up here about 8 years ago, Anne and I, and loving the weather and still riding the bike a bit. Racing every weekend, and we're loving it.
Yeah, still in doing a bit of Masters stuff, and I suppose you'd bump into your old sparring partner, Danny Clarke, because I think he's up that way too, isn't he?
Yes, Danny's down at Surface. Raced against him last weekend. He's just come back up into A grade. He had a bad crash here about 18 months ago, and he's just got back up into A grade now. So we raced against each other last Sunday. And it was good to catch up with him.
Yeah, he's a terrific guy. I have had Danny on. Look, what are the sports that you used to like to play, Rod, before you got into cycling? Because I know you didn't take up real racing until you were about 19. What did you used to do? What were you interested in?
I played underage football with Alveston. I played under-19s, and then where I was working, I was an apprentice butcher, and two of the guys there were bike riders, Noel Carlon and Seth Hendricks, and said, "Oh, why don't you get a bike, get on the bike and have a go?" And he said, "I'll help you find a bike," and got hooked.
Can you remember what sort of bike you had? What was the brand?
He just got me a second-hand track bike. I had the first year, second-hand wheels and all. I had a road season first before I started on the track, and then that was it then. I've been doing it nearly ever since.
So Cess was coaching you back then. What did Cess bring to the table for you? Did he map any training programs out for you, or was it just sort of just get out and do as much as you can?
Yeah, he sort of told me what to do as far as training. He sent me out the road and told me what to do. And then when I started racing the track, Peter Coventry from La Trobe sort of took over, and he was sort of my mentor for a lot of the track season, which is good.
Yeah, and I guess cycling. What was it about cycling for you? I mean, you know, Seth said, "Well, why don't you pick up a bike and have a go?" What sort of made you stick to it like glue?
I think the Christmas carnivals sort of caught my imagination, and then once I started racing and had a bit of a success, I thought I'll stick at this. I found something I can do.
Well, you won the 1972 Devonport wheel, and then a year or so later, you won the 73 wheel race. Is that right?
Yeah, New Year's Day on 73. Yeah, I had a pretty lucky start to my career, so I couldn't toss it in then.
So, what was it like learning the tactics of it all, Rod? Because you know, there's a lot going on out there. If you're on the infield and you're listening to the riders as they're getting around, there's a fair bit of lip and tactical manoeuvring, isn't there?
Oh yeah, but living on the coast, there's so many good bike riders around, and they're already, you know, they all have helped me and advised me on what to do and what not to do, and that's so I was pretty lucky there really, because it's. As you know, there's so many good bikies around Devonport area. You know, it just makes it a lot easier for you.
And then you had to contend with the international riders that came through. We don't see quite as much of that nowadays because there've been clashes with the coastal carnivals and other carnivals that are on the mainland, etc. But it must have been a big buzz to ride against some of the real elite international guys that came across.
Oh, it was, like, you know, guys like, well, we had Danny Clarke most of the time, but, you know, other guys from Europe that we raced against, you know, it was good just to be on the same track as those guys and have a race. It was, you know, made it really worthwhile.
I don't know why his name keeps on bobbing into my head, but Urs Froehler. Urs Froehler was a guy that came across. Can you remember him? Because I think there's a lot of buzz about him coming. I think he came over multiple times too.
Yeah, him and Hans Kanelka used to come together. I raced against them three or four seasons when they came over. He was probably one of the him and Danny Clark were the two best bike riders I've raced against.
And speaking of Danny Clark, you were a huge part of carting Danny to that famous victory in 1974, where he just came from the clouds. We keep talking about it. I keep talking to people on this show about famous athletes and wonderful performances, but that is one right out of the top drawer, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't stop watching it. Once you've seen it once on your TV, you just got to keep watching. It's unbelievable.
And what your role on that particular day was to keep the pace up, make sure that there was probably an opportunity for Danny to get there?
Yeah, they went pretty quick, and even when Danny was left on his own, no one thought he had a show. Like, he was still nearly half a lap behind, and he just flew down the back straight. I've never seen anything like it.
And look, you were a scratchman, and pretty much from the get go, you were off scratch. So you must have really taken to this thing pretty well. What was the favourite for you? Were you a track cyclist? Did you like to do that or road?
More of a track cyclist when I was younger. Now it's the road, but I used to love the track then, and probably pursuit racing and teams pursuit was probably my best thing. So I tried to concentrate on that a fair bit.
And you won the Tasmanian Individual Pursuit 8 years in a row. So that was certainly something that you took to quite well. Can you remember any particular rider in those eight years where it really stood out that you thought, oh, I'm beaten here, but you got up?
Usually, raced all good bike riders like Neville Allison, Frank Atkins, a mate of mine, Wayne Roberts. They're all hard to beat, and I felt privileged if I could ever beat those guys. I was pretty pleased with myself.
What sort of relationship do you have with the handicappers on the track? They're always the faceless men. They're always sort of have a tough job, don't they?
Oh yeah, I wouldn't take that on for anything. No way.
Go ahead.
They treated me fairly well, I thought. I could never complain, but you've got to take what you get.
Yeah, you do. Stay with us, Rod. We'll take a break and we'll come back and have a little bit more of a chat about your career. I'm speaking to Rod Johnson, who was a real champion cyclist back in the 70s in Tasmania, particularly here on the northwest coast. Welcome back to the Sideline View. Michael Maney with you, and my very special guest on Where Are They Now is Rod Johnson, who is currently living in Surfers Paradise. He's gone up to the sun, doing it beautifully up there, but he was an absolutely brilliant cyclist here for a long, long period of time. And Rod, before we went to the break, we were chatting about the individual pursuit and the handicapping and all that sort of stuff. You tended to like the track, as you said, and the A-grade scratch race, they were the ones that seem to be the ones that you really wanted to win the most. Is that right?
Yeah, but always, like, you're racing at some of the best guys in the world, so if I could probably sneak away in a break is my best chance of figuring into place, so I used to try that a fair bit of the time.
So were you, like I mentioned the tactics just a little earlier, just talking about a little bit of lip out there, a little bit of tactical manoeuvring and stuff. So was your game to get out, keep the pace up and then finish real hard? Because I know that you had a real good turn of speed, because I remember going to the carnivals and watching you ride. Was it that you had good timing and good sense as a racer?
I wasn't as quick as some of the good guys in A grade. That's why I sort of tried to break away. I could probably better if I could try and wear them down a bit. I wasn't as quick as like people like Grant Atkins and Danny Clark. They had that brilliance at the end that I didn't quite have. So I had to try and make it hard as I could during the race to wear them down a bit.
Did you ever think of going overseas to pursue a career? Because there was a bit of money, I guess, over in Europe and all that sort of thing. Was it just not the right time for you to go over there and do something, or just want to stay at home?
Oh, it would have been great to go, but I was married with a young family, and you got responsibility, so I wouldn't change that. But it would have been nice to have a crack over there, just see how I stood up.
Did you have anyone sort of come and tap you on the shoulder, or someone give you a call and just say, look, here's a contract, I can go, or didn't it ever get that far?
No, No, I never got that far. No such luck.
Steele Bishop, what a wonderful rider he was. You narrowly were pipped in the gold medal national time trial against Steele Bishop. Tell us a bit about Steele, because he's a rider that came across to the carnivals as well. He's a wonderful rider, wasn't he?
Yeah, I got to know Steele quite well. Yeah, terrific guy. And as you said, I raced him off in the final at the national titles and managed to get a silver there. And then he went on and won the world title that year, so made my effort look a bit better, I think.
So you're making your gradual change from track to road and going the real long distance. You end up winning the Launceston to Hobart, the Devonport to Launceston, the Burnie 80, the Devon 80, the Campbelltown 80. So you really took to the road. Is that like a bit like a 1500 metre runner who then perhaps turns his attention to marathon running? Is that sort of like a similar thing in cycling?
Yeah, it probably is. I didn't, in my early days, I didn't have the stamina for the really long races. Perhaps I didn't get the training in that I wanted to. I had a hard job where I was working on my feet 40 hours a week. But as I got older and got more endurance, I really started to like the road and started to get some good results, which I was pretty happy about.
Was the road a little bit about teamwork too, or did you feel you were very much an individual out there on your own? Or because there's guys that sort of take the headwind a little bit and do it in spurts. Was that is that how it rolls with road racing?
Yeah, especially with handicap racing, you've got to have the guys that you're starting with. You've got to work together and combine well. Otherwise, you don't see the front guys, and you're wasting your day. So most of the guys, they sort of work in together and they get a good result.
I know we're bouncing back from road to track, and I've just got some notes here that say you won the Wynyard Wheel and then maybe the last ever Queenstown Wheel. So where would the Queenstown Wheel be won and run? Was there a bike track around Queenstown, or was that run at Rosebery?
No, it was at Queenstown. There was a really pretty good track around the gravel football ground there. But I don't think it's there, and I think they've ripped it up since then. I think that's about 1984 when I won the wheel race there. So I think it was the last carnival I had down there, which was a shame because it was always good to go down there and have a race.
Now, you mentioned that you still compete against and with Danny Clark, etc. What sort of races are you doing up there in Queensland?
We've only been doing criteriums. So we've got a couple of purpose-built criterium courses, and there's a motor race circuit that we race on at Norwalk sometimes too, so we race them nearly every weekend, so I'm really enjoying that. A good strong field. We get 40 riders sometimes in A grade, so it's really good.
And Rod, just a final one, you've ridden against some brilliant riders. You've mentioned Danny Clark. Danny Clark aside, who was right up there as the best rider, or in the top one or two that you've ever seen compete along here across the coast of the carnivals, etc.
I'd say Urs Frawler would be the top of the list. Michael Grender, another superstar. We had so many, and I got to race with guys like Graham Hotchkiss and Mark Osborne, Grant Atkins, Frank Atkins. The list goes on and on. There's been so many good blokes,
Yeah, and I guess the hardest trainer. I know Frank Atkins was an extremely hard trainer, but from what you've seen, who sort of put the most in on a local stage? I know you obviously would have been extremely hard trainer as well. But is there anyone that stands out as perhaps the hardest trainer who really put everything in?
Probably on the road, my mate Tim Burford. He used to put a lot of work in. He'd do 500 or 600 kilometres a week when he was at his prime, and he wasn't the fastest bike rider there, but if it was a real cold, wet, miserable day, he loved it, and he'd just ride away from him. He was that tough. So he was a real inspiration.
And do you keep an eye on cycling these days, Rod, like internationally? I guess you see Richie Porte in particular doing so well. Do you keep an eye on track and road cycling much?
Yeah, I try and follow all the tours in Europe and that sort of thing, try and keep an eye on that. It's good to see the Aussie guys going so well.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Look, we have a rich heritage of wonderful cyclists. You're part of all of that, Rod. It's been fantastic to have you on the Sideline View, and thanks for making yourself available.
Oh, worries. It's good to talk to you, mate. Thanks for having me on.